now tuned into the Pod Awful channel. Pod Awful.
By Quarterly Women's Social Club.
Dazed and Convicted.
Pool Party Radio.
Show Kane.
The Devil's Advocate.
The Projection Booth.
Awful Flips.
PodAwful.net.
At last, I have control of your TV set. Are you receiving me?
Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of The Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
Black man in a white man town, he's got trouble. He's gonna cut you down, take it over. He can ride, he can shoot. Don't take nothing from nobody. Oh, he's black, bad, scared of nothing. Yeah, he's so bad.
They call him boss, boss nigga.
They rode into a white man's town, bringing black man's law. He's black. He's brutal. He's boss. Fred Williamson is Boss Nigga.
They call him boss. Boss Nigga.
I just swore in your new deputy and made myself the sheriff.
He just locked up the bank president.
Part legend, part devil. Oh. All man. Boss Nigga. Williamson is Boss Nigga. Nervio Martin is deputy.
They call him Boss. Boss Nigga.
Rated PG. All ages admitted. Parental guidance suggested.
Welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm your host, Rob St. Mary, and of course, joining me, Mr. Mike White.
Morning, ma'am, and isn't it a lovely morning?
Up yours, nigger.
And joining us this week from Badass Mofo, the head honcho, David Walker.
How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
All right. This week, we're talking about Boss Nigger, the 1974 black Western starring, written, and produced by Fred the Hammer Williamson. The Hammer plays Boss, a bounty hunter, who along with his partner, Amos, played by Dervell Martin, decide the best way to make money and catch the bad guys might just to become the sheriff and deputy of a nearby corrupt town. And of course, two black dudes rolling into a lily white town and becoming the head law enforcers doesn't seem to go over too well. But Boss and Amos find ways of dealing with the locals while rooting out the corruption and teaching ignorant white folk a thing or two about how to treat the recently freed African Americans. Now, just a note, we will be following the black laws that are mentioned in Boss Nigger, and we don't plan on paying any fines or doing any time for using the word nigger in the wrong way.
Somebody help me stop this nigger. He's cleaning out my store.
Deputy, do your duty.
Sir, you are under arrest.
Me? What for? He's the one breaking the law. He's cleaning out my supplies.
We're on the town payroll.
Sir, you have broken the black law number 6. Being called a nigger in public. Now that's $20 or 2 days in jail.
Oh, this is outrageous.
You heard the man, so we'll be using the word the correct way, as it's the title of the film. Kind of hard not to say it. If you happen to have a problem with that word, you probably should just turn the podcast off now, because you'll be hearing it a few times, so you've been warned. But as I said, we're going to do it the right way. So, David, as our guest, we'll start with you. What was your experience in seeing Boss Nigger, and what did you think?
My first experience, I saw it on VHS in either the late 80s or early 90s under its alternate title, which is just plain Boss, and I fell in love with it. It's the best of the Westerns, of the blaxploitation Westerns, followed maybe closely by Take a Hard Ride. And I just, you know, I'm also a big fan of spaghetti Westerns, and even though Boss Nigger isn't a spaghetti Western, it comes about as close as you can get. And just has a great sense of humor, and, you know, Fred Williamson is fun in it, and Dervill Martin is great. I'm also a huge Dervill Martin fan, who, you know, unfortunately died really young, and so he didn't do a lot of movies that we get to see.
What about you, Mr. White?
I want to say that I saw this one a few years ago, but I honestly can't remember seeing it. So for sure, I saw it within the last 6 months and have watched it again a few times, and I'm really looking forward to talking about it more with you guys.
As for all of these black westerns that we'll be talking about, I haven't seen any of them at all until now. I think the reason why we decided to choose this one to do on the show was because we had that offer to talk to Fred about Original Gangsters 2, and I said, why not line up something we can talk to him about to sort of extend our interview with him? And I figured, why not this one? Because it was the first film that he produced and wrote, and I figured he would have some good things to say, which you'll hear later in the interview. So I kind of just took it on a lark that, you know, it was a pretty well-known title. I hadn't seen it, and I thought, why not put two and two together and sort of see how it all comes together?
Well, in that regard, you guys lucked out, because I've seen all the Westerns, even the ones that are hard to find, and this is the best of them. And, you know, Fred, he directed Adios Amigos, which was, we don't even need to talk about that. And then there was The Legend of Nigger Charlie and the sequel, The Soul of Nigger Charlie, and we can get into all that later. But really, Boss Nigger is like not only the best of the Fred Williamson Westerns, but also head and shoulders above movies like Soul Soldiers or The McMasters. Or, I mean, there's some pretty obscure movies out there that a lot of people haven't seen. They never made it to DVD, and so they sort of got lost in the death of VHS. So this is actually a great movie to talk about.
Yeah, and it is a great film. I had a lot of fun watching this one. I like that it does, as you said, David, it really does kind of hearken to spaghetti westerns, and there really is that kind of man with no name. Obviously, he does have a name, which is Boss, which is also kind of, you know, more of a request for some respect, really, in this town. But I like, it feels very much like Fistful of Dollars in the whole way that Clint Eastwood is constantly going back and forth between the two families in that town and constantly hitting them up for money and getting more. And with this one, we kind of have the thing that Rob talked about at the beginning, where it's the whole tax. Like, if you use the N-word the wrong way, you're going to get taxed for it. And, you know, it just keeps raking up more dough and setting people up against each other and getting more and more money that way. I guess he kind of does the same thing a little bit in Adios Amigo, or at least the Richard Pryor character does that a little bit. But in this one, it's got a lot more fun to it, and the film just has a lot more heart to it, and it kind of sticks to that whole spaghetti western storyline a little bit more too, as far as the hero, when he gets the shit beat out of him, when he comes back, how he succeeds, and the whole build up. It, as I said, it reminded me a lot of Fistful of Dollars. It also kind of reminded me a little bit of Not Hang Him High. What's the one where he comes to town and paints the town red?
High Plains Drifter.
Right, exactly. It reminds me a lot of High Plains Drifter in that kind of way, too, where he comes in and just kind of exploits the town people who are treating pretty much everybody that isn't one of, like, the main townspeople, you know, treating them badly. So, like, the dwarf that's in High Plains Drifter, I guess you could kind of say, is a little bit like the Mexicans that Fred Williamson helps out, and just that whole way that, you know, when Clint Eastwood comes into town, he starts to change the balance of power. That's definitely the way when Williamson and Derville Martin come into town, they do the exact same thing.
Two movies that really, I think, had an impact, I always figured had an impact, I could be wrong, were the two Trinity movies that Enzo Barboni did. They Call Me Trinity and Trinity Is Still My Name, with Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer, because that got this sort of comic duo thing going in Westerns, which Boss Nigger really does well, the play between Fred Williamson and, again, Derville Martin. So, and I don't know if either of you have ever seen the Trinity movies. I'm a big fan of both of those, and I have always thought that, and those came out like in 70 and 71, and I always thought that he probably saw those because they were big hits here in the U.S. and sort of borrowed from those as well.
I love the Trinity films. I've only ever seen them on those, like, bargain VHS 3-packs, you know, where it was, like, just shitty, shitty quality. But even full frame and, you know, just looking nasty, they're still hilarious. So the comedy translates, even though it's presented in a really bad form.
Most definitely.
So did we sort of handle the plot, or do you think that we should go a little bit more into that?
We might want to talk a little bit more about it. I mean, we talked a little bit about them coming into town, but I guess we didn't talk about the note and the whole that whole thing.
Yeah, the film opens up. It's actually kind of interesting. It opens up with a bunch of guys around a campfire, and they're trying to open this chest. And then sort of out of the darkness, you don't know where it's coming from, they get gunned down, sort of left and right. And then that's when we have the appearance of both Boss and Amos, and they're going through sort of their things, and we find out that they're bounty hunters. And as they're going through their various things of the dead men and trying to collect the reward for the bounty, they find that one of them had been offered to become sheriff of this town and that they work for this gang. And basically this becomes sort of the blackmail note. I don't want to use the term blackmail in a...
Why has it got to be black?
But it becomes this blackmail note that the pair go, this will be interesting because we can get our bounties and we can get paid to become sheriff and deputy of this nearby town. So they go to town and basically say, hey, we found this note. This is really interesting. Not only are you, the mayor, willing to hire this, you know, thug who's working with this gang of thieves to be your sheriff, we don't necessarily think that you probably want people to know that you're working with the criminal element that seems to come over and knock over your town from time to time. So they sort of hold that over the mayor's head, and then that leads to this whole... leads to them becoming the sheriff and becoming the deputy of the town. And then there are these things that are sort of peppered in there related to the people in town sort of getting used to the fact that these two guys have come into town, two black dudes have come into town, and they're going to run law enforcement there. And some people really seem to have a problem with that, even to the point of, you know, I don't want him sort of touching my wife because, you know, these black devils and all of this. So it's sort of interesting how it plays out. And I think that really when you get into a lot of the setups of the scenes and what the various scenes are, this movie is much more contemporary than something that would be in the 1870s in terms of the ideas that it's talking about.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that if nothing else, I think this came after Adios Amigos, if I'm correct.
It was before.
Was it before?
Yeah, this is the third of the four sort of Fred Williamson westerns. So Adios Amigos was a year or two later.
Got it. Well, it's definitely the film that it's one of the better films that Fred has written, and it does. It has this sort of contemporary feel of, you know, like you could almost place it in another era, another decade, like outside of the 1800s, put it even into the early part of the 20th century and still make that storyline work. And I think that that's part of why audiences resonated with it. It's not too heavy-handed and what's trying to say there's that sense of humor, but there's also some relevance to it, which is like, you know, that sort of mirrored the way, you know, Hollywood was shifting a little bit, and suddenly, you know, guys like Fred Williamson and Jim Brown were actually becoming the leading men and action heroes in roles that, you know, gone to Clint Eastwood and John Wayne and guys like that.
Before we forget, I want to point out that the guy who plays the mayor, his name is R.G. Armstrong. And as soon as he came on screen, I was like, oh my God, I've seen this guy so many times. And of course, I blanked exactly where I had seen him. But if you go and look up his filmography on IMDb, he's got like 182 credits there. And he has been in everything from Predator to Race with the Devil. And he was in Mean Johnny Barrows again, which is another Fred film, right?
Yep.
So, and he was, you know, Mr. TV and everything, you know, Charlie's Angels, Vegas, and he's just got a great face, and he's one of these guys, he's got one of these faces that, you know, Peckinpah used in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, so a terrific Western player, but also, you know, fits in kind of with this contemporary idea that you're talking about, Rob.
And I think what really makes it contemporary is several things. Unlike the spaghetti Westerns that you could say it borrows from in terms of, you know, tone or idea, it doesn't go for old style music. All of the music that's in the film is like 70s funk R&B kind of stuff. It's not that sort of, you know, lone guitar and harmonica Ennio Morricone stuff at all. But the other thing that made it contemporary for me is I go, okay, this is 1975. Consider 64, 65 was, you know, civil rights movement. So I was like 10 years earlier. And there's a lot of things in here in terms of scene setups that to me sort of play on the stuff that people who would be seeing this film either would have encountered a few years earlier or were continuing to encounter in their own lives. For example, I mean, obviously the whole thing in there with, as we played at the beginning with, you know, putting up a fine for being called nigger in public, the whole thing about they go to the cafe and they sit down and they want something to eat.
Look, he knows he's a nigger. I knows I's a nigger. So you don't have to tell us we is. But not even niggers got to eat. So go get me some food before I blow your damn head off.
Yes, sir, Mr. Nigger. Oh, dear, I mean, yes, sir.
And things like that. There's a lot of stuff in here. The whole sort of thing where when he first comes into the bar, the gang's there and they're like, hey, come over here and shine my shoes. And he sort of puts on this, oh, yeah, thank you, master, kind of, you know, attitude. So there's all of this stuff that is, you know, that people would have dealt with who would have seen this film, you know, in terms of the attitude of the public through the civil rights era and things like that. And even things that I found interesting as well was when you talk to Fred, Fred says, look, he goes, here are my rules in terms of if I'm doing a film, it's like, I'm not going to die. I'm going to get the bad guy and I'm going to get the girl in the end. And there's this whole thing in here about him and the teacher where she comes over and she's like, oh yeah, you know, it's nice to meet you and all of this stuff. And I would like you to come have, you know, breakfast with me or something. And he's like, I've got enough problems. I don't need more problems dealing with a white woman too. So there's even that sort of angle in there too, where they're dealing with sort of inter-race, you know, possibility of relationships and things like that and what that all means. So the movie's very smart. It's played 100 years back, but if this was a contemporary film and say it was instead of the small town out west, it was Chicago or L.A. or New York, all of this stuff would have been contemporary.
Well, I think the Western kind of affords them the ability to turn the tables even further and to make this almost like almost a wish fulfillment kind of thing. So like as he's doing that kind of like step and fetch it thing where he's coming up to the guy in the bar rather than, you know, punch him in the face or something like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, way to go. He does him one better and shoots him in the goddamn foot. It's like, all right. And like that becomes like a running joke for the rest of the film, you know, talking about how he's got foot problems and getting the doctor over there and all that and forgetting that the guy's even in the jail cell. It's like, you know, thank you for being able to take it that one extra step by giving, you know, Fred and Derville guns where they can really take care of the problems that are in this film rather than just, you know, dealing with their fists or dealing with words. It's just like, yeah, let's give these guys some guns and let them go loose.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the fact that his career has lasted as long as it has says that he's a pretty smart, savvy guy from a business standpoint, but he's also just a really smart person. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about wish fulfillment. I think that that's what this movie really was. It was like Fred doing a lot of things that he wanted to do and that a lot of audiences wanted to see. And he brought that also to, you know, to Black Caesar, which is another one of his better films. I mean, I think Black Caesar and Boss Nigger are amongst his better films from the 70s. And a lot of those take, you know, sort of traditional genre pieces, the gangster film or the Western, and add that extra element of, you know, okay, well, this is what we would like to see added to these genres. And that's where why I think the film works. I mean, everything you're saying is it's easy for people to miss it with this film because it's a low budget, you know, and it has a lot of B-movie trappings, but it's all right there. And that's what makes it so interesting to me. It's why it resonates with everybody I know who sees it.
It may be a B-movie, but it looks awesome. I mean, the look of this film is really good, and I think it's very technically capable as well. And one other thing before I forget, I think it's very smart. We're talking about the wish fulfillment thing. I think it's very, very smart that they put Fred and Derville in like the best looking clothes of all the people that are in the town. I mean, both of these guys look so sharp, and everyone else in the movie is pretty disheveled. You know, everybody's dusty and dirty and everything. But Fred and Derville throughout most of the movie until, you know, when I was saying that whole, you know, the hero has to be beaten up kind of part of the film. But otherwise, they're looking good through this movie. And especially that hat that Fred's wearing is looking really good. I wish I had one of those myself.
I think from a technical standpoint, part of the reason why this film also stands out, and we'll talk about the other ones that are in this series, is the fact of the director. And Jack Arnold, if you go back and look at the stuff that he did, his probably most well-known credit to people is The Creature from the Black Lagoon. So you have a guy who 20 years earlier had done that film and had done a lot of TV and various other stuff. So here's a guy who knows how to use a camera and knows how to, you know, set this stuff up, even though he is dealing with a lower budget.
Well, yeah, and he did The Incredible Shrinking Man, which really is kind of, I always put that as kind of like a noir sci-fi, just the way it really uses that black and white palette and everything, and just really looks good. And obviously, not a big budget on that one either.
And yeah, he worked on a ton of television too, and so he definitely has a pedigree of knowing how to get the most for the dollar and get it up there on the screen. And I think that you know, Fred is always at his best when he's working with directors who know what they're doing, which, again, you go back to Black Caesar, that was Larry Cohen, you know. It does have a really good look, far superior to some of the other movies we'll be talking about, I'm sure. And it's the reason why it's one of the movies that I own, as opposed to the other ones. I'm like, yeah, I've seen them, but I don't need to own them.
When you also look at sort of the setup of the various characters within the film, and how, in a way, sitting down and sort of looking at where they sort of play on the line, is that the Jed character, who's the leader of the gang, is the outlaw. He's white, he's the outlaw, and then you have Fred's character, who is black and is justice. So there's sort of this mirroring of these two characters and sort of what they represent also in terms of their larger gang. And there's, like you were talking about, the guy that he shot in the foot. So you could sort of see him as maybe the deputy to Jed, much like Derville Martin's character Amos is to Fred's boss.
And Jed, played by William Smith, who, again, one of the best character actors out there. And as far as I know, still going strong, but he was in so many of my favorite 70s stuff, from TV to film. So, I mean, he was even in Kolchak, you know, as an Indian guy. So, played many races and everything, but always good in whatever he was in, and especially good as a bad guy.
Yeah, he's in the top 10 evil bad guys for, like, not even top 10, top 5 in terms of, like, the racist villains that you see in blaxploitation movies. His performance in this, and Black Samson as well, is like, you know, in Black Samson, he actually steals the movie from the hero. In this one, he's able to go toe-to-toe with Fred Williamson, and it's really effective. I mean, it's easy to hate William Smith and love him at the same time, because he is so good at what he does, especially when he plays the bad guys.
And hopefully we'll be talking more about William Smith, gosh, probably next year, if we ever finally cover Conan. I think the only thing that was distracting for me when it came to the film and the filmmaking was, I guess it was the teacher character that you were talking about, Rob. Was she the one with the overdubbed voice?
You know, the version that I was watching, I couldn't tell if she was overdubbed or not, because it wasn't a very pristine copy. It was sort of beat up, but I mean, it looked nice, but it was probably an old VHS dub.
The one that I watched, it was very obvious, and especially just the sound quality of whenever she spoke, it was so different than everybody else. And I know, you know, sometimes that's very quaint in 70s films. You know, like I'm thinking of Seymour Cassell in Death Game, where his entire performance is overdubbed. And her whole thing, I don't know if it was one of those, you know, the actress left before the looping could happen, or maybe she had, you know, a terrible speech impediment or something like that. But yeah, it was just kind of weird that all of her performance is dubbed, and it just was like these two guys talking normally, and then all of a sudden this third voice just chimes in from almost the heavens with her speaking.
That's a nice place you have here, Miss Brewer. I guess I'll just be going. Why don't you stay a spell and have some coffee or apple pie? I make the best in town.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
Look, I want to apologize for yesterday. I didn't mean it the way it sounded. What I was really trying to say was, well, I judge a man by his deeds and not by his color.
It was like, whoa, okay. So other than that, technically, I think that this was a very well-made film. And if anything, I think watching this a few more times, I could probably grow to love that. All right, I'm done.
You know, it's funny, David, when we were up at the top of the show here and you were talking about your first experience seeing it, and seeing it as it was called, Boss was the name of the VHS title of the film. A friend of mine told me online that the Toledo Blade, when this came out, would not run the title. So it was put in the paper as Boss Negro.
Wow.
Which totally sort of defeats the point, I think. You know, talking about at the beginning, the whole use of the word and how we're using it on the show and all that stuff. I can't even wrap my head around the fact that you would call the film that, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, that's a pretty ridiculous retitling of it. I mean, I think it had a couple other, like Big Black Boss or something like that. I mean, a lot of these movies had three or four alternate titles. It usually threw black into it, so it might have been like The Black Boss or something. But Boss Negro is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the title in 2014 doesn't work just because of the charge that word has. But in 1974, when this thing came out, I mean, it was such a great, almost contradiction in terms, you know, and just like, this guy is the boss, and he is, you know, he's the HNIC in this, and is just like such a great kind of turn and play on those two terms kind of coming together and hitting each other in the head. But I don't know, I could be reading way too much into it. And it could just be that they wanted to play on the titles of the other two movies, but not, you know, throw the Charlie part into it at all and just kind of concentrate on the one word of it.
Well, I mean, to me, the two words represent, as you were saying, I mean, boss obviously being the leader or the person in charge, and the other word being the servant or the slave, you know, and especially when we're talking about an 18, you know, the film takes place probably sometime in the early 1870s is what I'm thinking, because of the one scene where they're at, where they're eating, and the mayor comes over and Dervil Martin's character tells him, you know, wait outside and we'll talk to you in a minute.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's my pleasure to tell you
You are interrupting our breakfast. We never discuss business while we're eating. So if you would be so kind as to wait outside until we're finished, we would be happy to talk to you then.
Certainly.
Where'd you learn to talk like that?
I've been wanting to say that to somebody for 8 years. My slave master said that to me once. It sounded so pretty, I never forgot it.
Even if that was, you know, 1865, right before emancipation, that would make it, you know, 1873. So just the use of that idea and playing on that whole concept.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, from a historic standpoint, we have this view of the Old West based on the Westerns that we saw in movies, which was very different than reality. And so both Boss Nigger and then the Nigger Charlie movies, that wasn't uncommon in the Old West, that guys had names like Nigger Charlie. You know, like that was, if you go back and you actually study the Old West and cowboys, there were a lot of both notorious gunslingers and outlaws and lawmen, all who were stuck with that moniker, either in front of their name or after their name. And so in that regard, like, it's there's a level of historical accuracy to both of those films that I think, you know, he did Legend of Nigger Charlie first, Fred did, and I think that he wanted to bring some of that to it, like, take that accuracy, but then also turn it around and give it a power that it that it never had before in popular culture anyway.
We're going to take a break and play an interview with the boss himself, Fred the Hammer Williamson, after these messages.
It was a childhood corrupted by endless hours of VHS rentals.
We'll sick to manage it. You'd love it.
In his most formative years, he had seen it all.
I can handle anything.
Action.
Karate is not to be used aggressively. But if I have no other choice.
Horror. And romance. Now, he's decided it's time to go back. For just one more adventure.
Humans are such easy prey.
Noel Meller presents...
You're the problem, you little shit!
The Adventures in VHS Podcast.
Join me, Noel Meller, as each month I take an in-depth look at one movie from my collection of ex-rental 80s VHS classics and speak to one or two of the people involved with making them about what the format means to them.
The Adventures in VHS Podcast.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Download today from iTunes by searching for Adventures in VHS or visit adventuresinvhs.com.
You know, I was looking for a little excitement, but I was worried about privacy. And then I found out about vibrators.com. Vibrators.com has the perfect products for women and men and couples. They have helpful suggestions and information on how to make sure you get something just right for you. Plus, for over a decade, Vibrators.com has never played around with your privacy. While other .coms make their money by selling your information, Vibrators.com never has and never will. And when you use the special code BOOTH, that's B-O-O-T-H, at checkout, you'll receive free priority shipping on any order. That's vibrators.com. Get a little excitement in your life.
All right, I'm here with Bill Byforce and Mr. Chris to tell you a little bit about Outside the Cinema.
All right, Reverend Scott, take us to church.
What can we expect to find from a typical show?
2 hours of just random blabber.
Is there anyone's coattails you rode in on to popularity?
I'm the guy that fucking burns the coattails and then pisses on them.
You review all these exploitation, horror, comedy, cult, and often all-around terrible movies. You must have a strong driving force that keeps you going.
Ego.
I don't know if I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while.
Really?
I have been saying that for a while. Also, I'm high on smack.
Well, it's definitely working for you guys. People are coming out in droves to support you on iTunes.
We just the other day got a one-star review on iTunes.
Well, that is one star too many. Let me tell you, the worst fucking piece of shit I've ever heard.
This has been great, guys.
Thanks, Scott. That was good. Oh, he's got you crying over there.
I'm good for the rest of the year.
Nice.
That was too much.
Hey, Iris, you know what we should do? We should try to get Fred Olin Ray on the show.
Why would he want to come on our show?
Hi, this is Fred Olin Ray, and you're listening to the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Count podcast.
Okay, what about Olaf Ittenbach, Germany's Splatter King?
That'd be great, but I doubt he speaks any English.
I'm Olaf Ittenbach, and you're listening to the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Count podcast.
What about the director of Blood-Sucking Freaks, Joel M. Reed?
Isn't he dead?
This is Joel M. Reed, and you're listening to Badass Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
No, Iris, he's not. Hello, I'm Mike, host to the Badasses Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
And I'm Iris, co-host of the Badasses Boobs and Body Counts podcast.
Every week, and I, Iris, discuss lesser-known action, exploitation, and horror cult cinema.
Mike and I discuss films like The Black Godfather, The Beast That Killed Women, and Biozombie, to name just a few.
And every now and then, we get to speak with the people behind all the films we love to talk about.
Okay, how about this, Mike? Let's get Andy Sidaris on the show and talk girls, guns, and G-strings.
Iris, he's actually really dead, but we did manage to talk to his wife, Arlene, way back in episode 20.
Well, I suppose that's the next best thing.
Yeah, I suppose so. So the Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts podcast can be found on iTunes, on Stitcher's Smart Radio, and on SoundCloud. Just search for the BB&BC podcast to start listening today. You can also visit the show's website at badassesboobsandbodycounts.com. Okay, Iris, did you keep track of the boob and body counts on the film we're discussing next week?
No, I thought you were doing that this week.
No. I've seen this. Boy.
No, it was you. It was you.
Look, from now on, let's both do that.
Okay, that sounds good.
If you listen to Proudly Resents, the cult movie podcast, you would know how to properly crush a head.
But let's say you want to crush a head like Toxic Avenger or the famous full head crushing scene. You take a cantaloupe, carve out the inside, then you load what we call loading the cantaloupe. We used to put in hamburger mixed with cranberry sauce, but now because I'm a vegetarian, it's only cranberry and spaghetti and things that are not animal. Then you put a wig on the cantaloupe and paint a little happy face. Bingo.
That was Lloyd Kaufman from Troma Films. To hear more interviews and reviews, go to ProudlyResents.com or find Proudly Resents on iTunes and Stitcher.
One of the films that you did, matter of fact, it was the first film that you wrote and produced, wanted to ask you a few questions about Boss Nigger. And, you know, at that point in your career, why did you decide that, you know, you wanted to go in and write it and produce it and things like that? Kind of tell me how that came together for you.
Well, my first film was Adios Amigo, and that I did, you know, I mean, raising money for a film that's supposed to be a black film has always been hard. So the way to keep the budget down is to learn how to do everything. When I did my first movie, MASH, I never left the set. I watched everything. I watched how they set the camera. I watched how they set the lights. I bugged the hell out of everybody on the set. I never went in my trailer and had my champagne and caviar. I stood out there and bugged everybody. What do you call that? What's the name of that thing? So by the time I finished my television series with Julia, I knew how to make films. I knew how to do everything. I knew how to edit. I knew how to do everything because I had asked questions to learn. So I know that if I'm the director and I'm the producer and I'm the star, I'm free. If it's my project, I'm free. So I can raise money and make a good film without spending a lot of money. And my low-budget films are not really low-budget films because they're all, you know, when you count all the money that I get from working in the film, it's no longer a real low-budget film. So it was out of necessity that I became a producer and a writer and a director. It was totally out of necessity.
For a lot of years, you were kind of going between, you know, the urban action films and Westerns. Did you have a preference when it came to which kind of film you were doing?
Yeah, my preference is sustain my three rules. One, you can't kill me in a movie. Two, I have to win all my fights in a movie. And three, I get the girl at the end of the movie if I want it. You do two out of three of those, and I'm there.
Had you ridden a horse before?
If you asked me that at the time, I would have said yes and then ran out and learned how. So you never ask an actor what they can do. Actor can do everything. You never ask an actor can they do anything because they're gonna lie and tell you they can to get the role. Then they're going to go out and learn how to do it. I had never seen them. I hadn't been close to a damn horse when I did my first Western.
Oh, wow. Well, you seem like a natural.
Well, you know, desire creates ability. If you have a strong desire, you can learn quick. And I've always been a quick study in things that I've done. I've always been a quick study and fast learner. So I went and rode that horse. I went to a riding stables, and I rode every day, 2 and 3 hours a day on a horse. And pretty soon I didn't need a saddle, man. I was long range on a horse without a saddle.
When you sat down to write Boss Nigger, I was wondering what the inspiration was for the film.
The inspiration was the exploitation of the name. Because I had just finished two films called The Legend of Nigger Charlie and The Soul of Nigger Charlie. They were made by Paramount. So now I was going to ride on the coattail of what I had started with this fictitious character and this exploitation of the word nigger at that particular time. It was really a bad word. So I was capitalizing on what I had done and also capitalizing on the negativity of the name.
Yeah, I was curious, did theaters or distributors have any kind of problem with that at the time, or how was it treated back then? Because I know that the word has gone through several iterations throughout the years as far as, you know, the hot potato that it really has become.
Well, you know, in the film it's different, you know, because the film is about the character that's a winner. It's about the character that's winning the fight. So So if you got called a nigger, you got shot. It's real simple. In my Western, that's what Nigger Charlie did. He beat up his slave master, and he ran away to the West and became a gunfighter. So it was kind of dangerous in my movie to be called that name. So it was a winner. The character was a winner. Even though it was a negative name, he was a winner.
When watching the film, I really have the feeling that you were writing it from the perspective of maybe things that you had run into yourself during your own life.
I've never been hassled because of being black. Because I never really gave anybody that chance or that opportunity. Because my motivation to succeed and be a success was because I was black. So anybody that got in my way because I was black only motivated me further. So nobody would dare do that. Also, I'm the hammer, man. You can only go so far with that kind of stuff pushing me in a corner. You better have somebody behind you pushing me in a corner based on racial stuff.
So D'Urville Martin, your co-star, he had such a wonderful career as both an actor and a director, and sadly he's no longer with us. But what do you remember about working with him?
Well, D'Urville was great for me. I mean, I missed him terribly in all my films. D'Urville was the soft spot of the tough side of me. I would be the tough guy, and D'Urville would come along and say, you know, why are you doing that? You don't have to do that. Be kind or be nice. He was like the buffer between the stuff that I did and what he did. He was my sidekick, but he wasn't the tough guy. He was the kind of guy that kept me in line and pulled me back. It was a great combination.
When that film came out, how was the reaction in terms of box office and reviews and what you heard?
We lined them around the street in New York and Chicago, and I mean, theater wasn't big enough to hold all the people. Everybody wanted to see what Nigga Charlie was. And plus, we set them up beautifully. We did a big sign in Times Square, a big old billboard about 40 foot high, and it just said, "He's coming." It was me with my shirt off, my arms folded, and two guns on my side. It just said, "He's coming." After 2 weeks, the same poster was there. We just changed the words. It said, "Nigga Charlie has arrived." And so we set him up for it, man. I mean, it was beautiful. We set him up, and they fell for it, and they came out to see what Nigga Charlie was all about.
You know, earlier you were talking about how it seems that films with black actors always, at least now, is revolving around comedy. What do you think really needs to take place in order to bring back? I mean, obviously you can't bring back the what you were doing in that era, but maybe a new version of it. What do you think really has to happen?
Well, you got to look at the people that make the decisions. Their exposure to black life or their exposure to blacks just doesn't exist. How can a guy on the 16th floor know what's going down on the ground level unless he's there? These guys ain't walking through the ghetto. They're not going out on the corner of South Side of Chicago and says, "What kind of film do you want to see?" They look at the box office and they said, okay, they like comedy, but they don't say they like comedy because we're not giving them anything else. They just say, oh, well, they like to see the blacks doing comedy. I guarantee you, most of them are not walking through the black neighborhood, and if they did, you know, they better know how to say, "I'm a friend of the hammer," and they might get through. But it ain't happening, man. It's just that there is no exposure. Their life, the black life, just don't exist.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, hey, no thank problem. You so much.
No problem. It's been fun.
They call him Boss. He's a boss. Boss nigga. He's so bad. They call him Boss.
We're back, and we're talking about Boss Nigger. Thanks to Fred the Hammer Williamson for coming on the show. You can find out more about what he's up to and the film over on our website, projection-booth.com. So we've talked a little bit. We've kind of been skirting around the issue as far as the first two of these three films and then kind of a fourth entry in the cycle, let's say. So let's talk a little bit more about The Legend of Nigger Charlie, The Soul of Nigger Charlie, and Adios Amigo. And Rob, you mentioned that you saw kind of a beat up copy of Boss Nigger. Well, I don't know if there are good copies of the Nigger Charlie films, but the one that I tried to watch last night, man, it looked rough.
Well, I'll tell you sort of if you have a sort of a graph in front of you. Legend of Nigger Charlie is maybe at 50%, and then Soul is probably about 35% good in terms of the look. You know, the version of Boss Nigger I saw was probably 60%, and then Adios Amigo was probably back down to 50%. I mean, these transfers I saw were just beat up, and specifically, Soul was terrible. Like, in terms of how bad it looked, I mean, it was like turning colors and all this stuff. I'm hoping that it's in better shape, even though the film isn't all that good. So let's kind of get into the first two. Let's talk about Legend and Soul first. And were you able to watch those, and what did you think?
Now, I know, David, you've seen all four of these, right?
Yep, I have.
So I want to hear your opinion first, because you probably have seen these longer ago and probably under better conditions than I saw some of this stuff.
Well, you know, it's been a long time. It's only been a few years since I've seen Soul, because I managed to score a copy of that. That the picture quality was actually horrendous, even by my standards, and that's saying a lot. And picture quality on Legend isn't much better. The copy of Legend of Nigger Charlie that's been floating around for a long time is a dub of, believe it or not, the television broadcast. It actually aired on, I believe it was on BET, on Black Entertainment Television, in the 80s. And so this is, that copy is from a video master that I think has just been copied and copied and copied. Neither film is particularly good. I mean, the Legend of Nigger Charlie is head and shoulders in terms of entertainment quality way better than Soul, which is just bad on just about every level you can imagine, except for maybe the movie poster is pretty good. And you know, both films are just sort of everything that was wrong with a lot of other blaxploitation films. It's just, it's sort of uneven. And especially with The Legend of Nigger Charlie, the one thing I have to say in its defense is I've never actually seen a copy that I know to be completely uncut. I can't remember what the runtime of the movie is, but I believe that the copy that everybody has been watching all these years is something like 4 or 5 minutes shorter. Not that that makes that big of a difference, but I think I'm always hesitant to go, well, it was a terrible movie. I only saw the cut that was edited for TV. But that said, you only need to see it once, maybe twice, to let it sink in that, like, you're not seeing. And I think that's part of the problem with Boss Nigger is that, you know, people had seen the other ones and they weren't that good and kind of went in thinking that, you know, or even on video. I'm not sure. I'm at this point, I'm talking out of my ass. So, but yeah, neither of them are particularly good.
I was really reminded of like a bad television drama as I was watching The Legend of Nigger Charlie. It was just the production qualities. It felt like as they're walking across the floor, like I could, you know, hear the footsteps all the wrong ways and everything. And just everything felt so cheap while I was watching it.
You know what it reminded me of? And I don't want to say that it because it's definitely not on the same production level or story level, but it kind of reminded me of this odd mashup of kind of a Western, because it's not really, and you really get more of the Western like after like halfway through the film or further in.
Yep.
But it reminded me of like Roots, because there's this whole thing in the beginning with you know, back in Africa, and there's like, you know, folks running around, and then we're in America and they're on the plantation, and then there's like all this plantation politics and sort of like, oh, you know, you're going to be in trouble now because you pushed the master and all this stuff. So there's all this sort of like subpar version of Roots that's in there. And but which is interesting if you watch all four films, because then you can sort of see this through line of the character that Fred had, obviously, in Legend of Nigger Charlie, and it sort of keeps moving. By the time you get to the second film, it's definitely a Western. I would rather watch the first one again than watch Soul of Nigger Charlie. Soul of Nigger Charlie just is horrible. And the third one, Boss Nigger, is the one that's great. And what really makes me sad is that the fourth one, Adios Amigo, I wanted it to be so good because of Richard Pryor. And part of the reason why I wanted it to be so good because of Richard Pryor is because Richard Pryor was supposed to be in Blazing Saddles. He co-wrote Blazing Saddles and was supposed to play the Cleveland Little character. But because he was such a terror in terms of his drug use and being unstable, they couldn't get the production insurance to bond him. So Mel Brooks couldn't cast him. And when I heard that he had done this Western with Fred Williamson, I go, finally, now we can get some sort of idea of maybe what Blazing Saddles would have been like. And it's such a disappointment.
Nope. No such luck there.
No. Yeah. It doesn't help that you were talking about the reminders of Roots while you're watching the Legend movie. It doesn't help that Derville Martin's character's name is Toby. And I was just like, oh, and every time they're like yelling, Toby, Toby, I'm like, oh, Kunta. Come on.
Kunta.
Yeah. That's a slave name. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was glad to see Don Pedro Cawley show up, though, as Joshua, who I love that guy. He's a great, great actor. And, you know, he's been in some of my favorite films, even I will say Beneath the Planet of the Apes, which I'm not a big fan of the film, but when he shows up, he does a really good job. But he was incredible in Sugar Hill and everything else that I've ever seen him in, THX 1138 and everything. But yeah, having those three guys, I was just like, yeah, this is going to be great. And it just didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah. It's funny that you compare it to say it's like watching a TV show. I think I wrote a review of it that I kept referring to it as Nigger Charlie and Company, and how it seemed like a pilot for a Fox series that just never got picked up in the 80s. And
where he rides from town to town, correcting justice and all that.
Exactly. The movie came out in 72, which was really early in sort of the blaxploitation by blaxploitation standards. And I think that they hadn't found their footing yet. The genre itself hadn't found its footing, and it was trying to be, I don't want to say politically correct with that title, but it was like it was trying to be more well-rounded, and it was trying to contextualize the slavery experience and all this sort of stuff, and create this character who you were supposed to be sympathetic for. He's this escaped slave, and I was just like, just give me the killing, It's like, give me the revenge part of it. And it's interesting because, there's another film that Fred did called Joshua, which is another Western that also gets it wrong. And it's better than the Nigger Charlie movies and better than Adios Amigos. And it's clearly him trying to do Clint Eastwood, but it still doesn't work. It's really Boss Nigger's like this sort of anomaly that actually works, because we talk about four films, there's really actually five, and that fifth one, Joshua, is like, that's a movie that you could edit it down to 15 minutes, and it still might not be that entertaining.
I had forgotten that I watched Joshua. That's how memorable it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot that you told me to watch it and sent me a link to it, and I didn't watch it. So I watched all the other ones, and I'm still upset that I had to sit through Soul of Nigger Charlie. That one sucked the soul out of me.
Yeah, right now, Adios Amigo and Joshua are available out on YouTube, and I would say that's probably the best way to watch these, just so you're not really investing any money in them. I feel bad saying that, and I feel bad kind of capping on these other films, but when you compare them to Boss Nigger, I mean, it is just like,
head and shoulders
it
above.
Is night and day. Oh, yeah. Head and shoulders above. I mean, yeah. I would watch Boss Nigger again in a heartbeat. It is a very fine film and something to be enjoyed. But yeah, I mean, I'm not comparing these other films to, Sergio Leone films. I'm not comparing them to, any Don Siegel films, any of those. Ted Post, can direct a far better film than, these early ones. I mean, it was the same kind of company. It was Martin Goldman and Larry G. Spangler doing these early ones. And yeah, just not good. And I really, like you were saying, I wanted to like Adios Amigo because I was like, oh, okay, well, Fred's almost playing like this straight man character to Richard Pryor. And I can kind of see what's going on here, that Richard Pryor keeps, foisting all this blame over onto Fred's character. And, it kind of reminded me of that relationship between Blondie and Tuco in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly a little bit, but just never kind of came together. So it was just a shame in that way. And you're right, as far as the whole like Blazing Saddles thing, because obviously I was reminded of Blazing Saddles a lot while I was watching Boss Nigger, and I thought, okay, yeah, this will be more Blazing Saddles-ish with Richard Pryor as one of the two main stars. But
the other problem I have with Adios Amigo is the problem I had with Big Gus What's the Fuss, where I talked about how they kept playing that damn theme song over and over again.
Yes, I
marked down how many times we get the Adios Amigo theme song. Okay, in the first 15 minutes, it's played four times.
Wow.
Four times. That's in the first 15 minutes. Adios Amigo. The film, it plays seven times. There's only one part where I go, uh-oh, they're going to play it again? But no, they played a different song instead. So seven times, and the movie's only 90 minutes. So that means about every 12 minutes, you got to hear this damn theme song again.
I have to admit, I was really kind of bummed out too, because one of the actors that's in Adios Amigo, his name is James Brown, and I was like, oh shit, James Brown was in this movie?
Oh, yeah, I was so excited too when I saw it. I was like, no shit, James Brown. No, not nope. That James Brown.
Different guy. Yeah, white guy.
White guy.
Does not know how to dance or sing very well. Maybe he does, I don't know. Not anymore, though. He's been dead for 20 years, but...
Well, I'll tell you one thing that was interesting about watching Adios Amigo, and I put this up on our Facebook page, was the fact that Fred Williamson in his hat, the beard, like the way he looks, that looks like another black Western I saw recently in terms of the design of his character. Gee, let me think. Could it be...
How do you like the bounty hunting business?
Kill white folks and they pay you for it? What's not to like? I like the way you die, boy.
He is a rambunctious sword, ain't he?
What's your name?
Django. The D is silent.
Yeah, I definitely saw very much a Django look with that. I mean, even though obviously it was a shitty transfer and everything, so it was almost hard to make out Fred Williamson at times. Hard to even make out if he had a beard. It's like, is that, I can barely see the screen in some of these, but yeah, he totally was rocking that same look that Jamie Foxx rocks in Django Unchained.
Yeah, no, there's definitely, it's you know, and Tarantino's always been one to do his homework, so in terms of watching pretty much everything there is to offer, and in terms of those sort of blaxploitation westerns, there wasn't that many to go through. You know, I mean, there was a great television series in the late 60s called The Outsiders, and the premise of that was a black bounty hunter who was an ex-slave teamed up with a white bounty hunter who was an ex-slave owner. And there's like,
was he a dentist?
He wasn't a dentist. No. So okay. He didn't go that far, but like a lot of people don't remember that TV show. I had hoped after Django Unchained came out, we'd get to see it released on DVD because it only lasted one season. I think it was only half a season at that. So it's probably not more than 12 episodes, but yeah, that was a great little show. And, you know, Django Unchained borrowed from that as much as anything else. And that's the thing, when there's only a handful of black Westerns to go from, it's pretty easy to look at Django Unchained and go, well, they took from this, this, and this. Well, that's because that's all there was to take from. But yeah, no, I saw those same similarities in my own self when I was watching it.
It was just the obvious design. I mean, and specifically that hat with the band and the way the hat's bent a certain way. And, you know, also, like I said, if you can get a halfway decent transfer and see that he has facial hair, it's almost the exact same design that Jamie Foxx has.
So I'm curious, David, you mentioned a couple other Westerns that just kind of are still laying about on VHS. Is there anything that's out there that's kind of worthwhile that people should be tracking down?
Well, I think, Take a Hard Ride is, I believe that that's out on DVD, and that's definitely worth checking out. You know, that's got the trifecta, because that's got Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, and Jim Kelly, and then Lee Van Cleef is the villain. So you've got, like, it's for the hard way with that film, and that's actually a bona fide spaghetti Western in that. I don't know if it was shot in Europe, but it has an Italian director, and that's a fun film. In terms of any of the other Westerns, like, no, not really. You know, I hate to say it that way. Take a Hard Ride is one of those movies that, for me, it actually gets better every time I see it. There actually is one called Thomasine and Bushrod that Max Julian was in, and Max Julian was the star of the Mac. And it's a decent film, but it's got some problems, too. I mean, it's better than, you know, The Legend of Nigger Charlie, Soul of Nigger Charlie, Joshua, Adios Amigos. It's better than all those. It's not as good as Boss Nigger. It's not as good as Take a Hard Ride. It's the best part of it is Glenn Turman, who plays a gunslinger in it. But yeah, you know, it's when you give your life over to a single genre the way I've given mine over to blaxploitation, and you've seen all of them, there just comes a point where you're like, okay, yeah, you just only watch these four and you're good. You know, when it comes to the Westerns, you can easily say, yeah, just watch these, like, really two, three if you want to throw in Thomasine and Bushrod, and you don't need to see any of the others. It's sort of the same way with spaghetti Westerns, where, you know, there was like over 600 of those made during their heyday, but you don't need to see more than like 30 of them at the very most. And if you remove the Sergio Leone ones from the mix, that number goes down to like 25, you know, so.
No, I know what you mean. There, you can go really deep and get into some really bad territory very quickly when you just start popping on like, oh, hey, this is a Western that was made in Europe. Let's check it out. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some interesting oddballs out there where it's like, oh, yeah, this has one kind of cool moment to it, or what the hell were they thinking with this? But yeah, there's some real dreck out there.
Yeah. No, those, their need to fill those Italian cinemas in the 60s and 70s with a new movie every week, it shows, you know? I mean, that's what a lot of people don't get. It's like they were switching those movies out nearly on a weekly basis. And yeah, I've watched some of those and I've thought to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, you're talking about spending money. It's like there comes a point where it's not even money. It's, I just gave this 90 minutes of my time that I'm never getting back. And that's like a crime against humanity right there, when you wasted your time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, out of the four that I watched, one of the 90 minutes was not a waste. So I guess that I am now in a deficit of about 4 hours. I'm going to go drink now because I'm very sad. Okay, we're going to take a break and play a preview for next week's show.
The realm of human desire, there is a darkness.
Well, that's why I'm with you. Because you say I for me.
Love opens to absolutely unknown horizons.
Isabella Gianni. The internationally acclaimed actress in her most explosive, controversial role. Sam Neill. Hines Bennett. Two men. And a woman no man could ever possess. Special visual effects by Academy Award winner Carlo Rambaldi. Mortal terror in human ecstasy. Soon you will know the meaning of possession.
It wasn't even human.
Darkness is forever. Possession.
That's right. We'll be back next week with a discussion of the horror film. Maybe you want to call it horror, maybe not. Don't say that around the director anyway. Possession. Don't miss it. Before we go, we want to thank this week's special guest co-host, Mr. David Walker, for coming onto the show. So, David, where can people go to catch up with you, and what is new in the world of Badass Mofo?
Well, they can go to badassmofo.com, which is badazzmofo.com, and I update that whenever the urge hits me, all kinds of nuttiness there. I'm working on multiple projects, but I think in terms of the listeners, the thing that would be of most interest to them is that I'm actually writing a book on blaxploitation, the history of blaxploitation, culling from my old reviews, but also giving it a much more comprehensive historical look. And that'll be out early next year, I think. I'm still sort of planning it all out, planning out the format, and really just I'm trying to study all the other books that have been written on the subject so that I can write the definitive one so no one else has to write another one.
Well, I think I might own at least 2 out of 3 books. I don't know. Have you done more than 3 books now?
I don't even know. I think I have like 4 books out now. Yeah. I mean, okay. I've also branched out because I'm doing, I've published my first young adult novel. I'm working on my second young adult as we speak.
Awesome.
So I branched out into other stuff other than just writing about film. But in terms of film stuff, yeah, there's only 2.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I picked up what I'm counting is I do not yet have your Spaghetti Westerns book, but I do have your Blaxploitation Volume 1, and then also the Reflections on Blaxploitation, which did you co-write that with Andy Rausch?
I did. That was a bunch of interviews that I had done that were sort of sitting around with no home, and then Andy was putting something together and contacted me, and we sort of decided, you know, I had the chocolate, he had the peanut butter, and so we put it together, and that one, that worked out really, really well. In fact, I'm writing some stuff for Andy's new book right now.
Oh, cool. And then you've done some film projects and stuff too, right?
Oh, yeah, I've done, I'm sort of a jack of all trades, but a master of none. I've done a couple film projects. I did a short film with Ken Forey from, Dawn of the Dead and the Devil's Rejects. I did a short film with him. Oh God, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, called Black Santa's Revenge, which was kind of my homage to blaxploitation films, and a couple other shorts. And I did a documentary on blaxploitation films called Mack, Hammered, Slaughtered, and Shafted, which that's, there's a link to that, to the YouTube channel that has the whole documentary. That's on the Badass Mofo website. So if you just go there, you can see all my film projects there. And and that's also going to be the title of the book, just because I like something that trips people up when they try to remember it.
Very cool. Well, it's a great title.
Thank you.
It reminds me of one of the old blaxploitation trailers.
Yep. 5 on the Black Hand Side. That's where I got it from.
Awesome. Glad I picked up on that. All right, I'm done asking David questions, Rob. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. It's always, that's why we have people on the show, is to find out what they got going on. So thank you again, David, for coming on the show. Thanks to Fred the Hammer Williamson as well, and thank you for listening.
Yo, check this out. A lot of people be getting mad because I use the word nigga. You know what I'm saying? They don't like the fact that I use the word nigga. They say, you a black man. Yo, I tell them I'm a nigga. They don't understand that. So I'm going to say what I want to say. I call myself what I want to call myself. You know what I'm saying? They need to stay off my dick, you know? Damn right, I'm a nigga. And I don't care what you are, because I'm a capital N-I-double-G-E-R. Black people might get mad because they don't see that they're looked upon as a nigga just like me. I'm a nigga, not a colored man or a black or a Negro or Afro-American. I'm all that. Yes, I was born in America. True, the South Central look like America to you. I'm a nigga, a stand-up nigga from a hard school. Whatever you are, I don't care. That is you, fool. I'm loud and proud, will endowed with a big beat. Out on the corner, I hang out like a horse thief. So you can call me dumb or crazy, ignorant, stupid, inferior, or lazy, silly or foolish, but I'm badder and bigger, and most of all, I'm a straight up nigga, nigga, nigga. That's right, I'm a nigga, you know what I'm saying? My man Lord Finesse is my motherfucking nigga, you know? Evil Leaf my nigga, Islam's my nigga, that's right, they're my niggas, niggas, niggas. I'm a nigga in America, and that much I flunk. Cause when I see what I like, yo, I take what I want. I'm not the only one, that's why I'm not bitter. Cause everybody is a nigga to a nigga. America was stole from the Indians, show and prove. What was that? A straight up nigga move. A low down shame, yo, it's straight insane. Yet they complain when a nigga snatched their gold chain. What is a nigga supposed to do? Wait around for a handout from a nigga like you? That's why a low down nigga gets hyped.
but I'm not the nigga of that type. I'm a steak and lobster eating, billionaire meeting, cash money making, moving, shaking, corporate jet gliding, limousine riding, writing hits, filthy rich, straight up nigga. That's right, I'm a nigga, nigga, nigga. Now I'ma write this song though the radio won't play it, but I got freedom of speech, so I'ma say it. She wanna be les, he wanna be gay, but that's your business, I'm straight, so nigga, have it your way. Those who hate me, I got something for ya. I'm a nigga with cash, a nigga with a lawyer, not a watermelon chitlin' eating nigga down south, but a nigga that'll smack the taste from your mouth. I'm contemplating, thinking, best champagne drinking, 10-inch giving, extra large living, Mercedes Benz driving, striving, surviving, all the way live and kicking, high-fiving, stroking, rapping, happening, deal doing, fly in from Cali to chill with the crewin', grinding, grooving, fly girly grabbing, horny gun shooting, long haired having nigga. Straight up nigga, 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 nigga. Straight up nigga, 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 nigga. That's right, fool, look at me. Just the kind of nigga you like to hang from a tree. But all you KKK type grave diggers, he's back, fool, cause I'm a trigger nigga. I work real hard for my living, but I don't celebrate bullshit Thanksgiving. Sit up like some fool and eat turkey. That's the day your forefathers jerked me. Shift us all over here in locks and chains. Split us up, twist it up a nigga's brain. Now you keep me in constant sweat, but I'm a nigga that you'll never forget. A black, bad, ironclad, always mad. Fly nigga taking off from a helipad. Rolex styling, buck, wildin', cash piling, sporting link chains and medallions. Intellectual, high tech, cashing 7-digit checks and still breaking necks. The ultimate male supreme, white woman's dream. Big dick, straight up nigga, 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 nigga.
Yeah, yeah.
Yo ho! Finger on the trigger, stealing all the dough like a big gold digger. Take a small problem, make a small problem bigger.
afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to our town. My name is Miss Pruitt. I'm the school teacher here. But I recall living in Boston, and my family had black people working for us. They were good people. They used to sing and dance a lot. I used to love to watch them.
Thank you for the welcome, ma'am. When you get back to Boston, you be sure and tell my people that you just met two niggers who don't know how to sing or dance.